This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Could you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the silly old permission to get in that mothership?
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else says it's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Man, I'm feeling great.
I'm doing great.
Happy Friday to you, boys and girls. One question only. How do you feel?
I feel good and I'm doing well.
That's all that really matters. We come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. They understand it's not just a mortgage, it's your mortgage. That's the difference. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. Thanks for being with us, everybody. Target Demo Friday. Let me know how you're listening and where you're listening. And I'll read through those coming up in about 40 minutes from now. On Twitter, DA on CBS is the handle. DA on CBS. Or on Facebook, facebook.com/TheDAShow. Without the NCAA tournament in play this month, we have decided to give you your daily injection of March Madness. It's time to go back 35 years to the greatest upset in national championship game history, 1985 and the Villanova Wildcats. It's the madness of March.
It's to Jenkins, to Drew for the win! Go!
Turned off. Calgary. Hall. Eight to shoot. Hall. The runner. Loose ball. It's good. With 4.4 to go. Shannon. Don't want to foul. Shannon from the corner. And it's over. Gonzaga. The slipper still fits. They win it. 73-72. Holy cow.
Buzzer beaters. Bracket busters. Iconic moments. The greatest stories of the NCAA tournament. It's the madness of March.
Villanova has moved to the brink of capturing this championship by blazing away at 79% from the floor. That, an NCAA tournament record. That's it. Villanova has done it.
In one of the greatest shooting displays ever, the 8th-seeded Villanova Wildcats upset the 1-seeded Georgetown Hoyas, who were defending national champs, and in their third national championship game in 4 years with Patrick Ewing and John Thompson, and the 8th-seeded Wildcats were national champs. An assistant coach on that staff under Raleigh Massimino is our friend Steve Lapis, and he joins us this morning on the show. Steve, good morning. How we doing?
I'm doing great, DA. How are you?
It's always a pleasure to talk to you, my friend, and you know, under uncertain times, it's nice to go back and feel nostalgic and wistful. And that 1985 season does it every single year. What are your favorite memories about the lead up to the NCAA tournament?
Well, you know, for me, it was very strange, D.A., because, you know, it was my first year on the staff. I was a high school coach the year before that. So, I mean, think about this. I go from being a high school coach, and I remember having a party in my we lived in Jackson Heights, Queens, and we had a little apartment there, and we used to invite our friends over all the time for the Final Four to watch. And so we had a party that year, and I remember saying to everybody who was there, boy, what I wouldn't give to have a ticket to go to a Final Four. I'd never been, obviously. I was a young guy. And the next year, I'm sitting on the bench. So, you know, for me, the whole experience, still to this day, 35 years later, very, very surreal.
What type of personality was Raleigh Massimino? I mean, he jumped off the television screen as such a character. What was he like behind the scenes?
He was a big personality, there's no doubt. And he was a tremendous basketball coach. And he was a guy who, I mean, he was the basis for everything that I ever did in my career and what a lot of his former assistants did in their careers. You know, he based everything on being family. And he was everybody's father, not just the players. He was the assistant coach's father also. So he was a big-time father figure. That's how he ran things. And he was a strict father. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, the kind a father that even like my dad was, who came here from Greece and was a Greek immigrant, who was very tough, but you always knew he loved you. So you never questioned that, and it was the same thing with him. Tough, you knew he loved you, tremendous teacher, and an unbelievable basketball coach, especially on the defensive end.
Steve Lapis joins us. In his first year on the Villanova staff, they marched all the way to a national championship in 1985. Let's talk about the Big East at that time, because the Big East was formed about 5 years earlier and had become an absolute monster, so much so that you had in this Final Four Georgetown, St. John's, and Villanova, all from the Big East, marching all the way to the Final Four in Lexington, Kentucky. What was the season like to make it through the gauntlet of such teams like those, like Syracuse, on and on and on, of these powerhouses nationally?
Well, you're right. And people don't realize Boston College that year, who was in the Big East, lost in the Elite Eight. Or we'd have had four teams in the Final Four.
Wow.
So, I mean, and that people forgot about that along the way. And that was one of Gary Williams' really good teams. So you could have had four teams in the Final Four. The Big East championship game with St. John's against Georgetown was 1-2 in the nation playing for a conference championship. So the league was unbelievable. But, you know, we didn't have a great regular season. You know, we thought, Coach Massimino thought we'd be better. We had three guys back from a team that had played in Elite Eights a couple of times. Eddie Pinckney was one of the best centers in the country. Who ended up being an NBA player. Harold Presley, Dwayne McClain. These guys were big-time players who had been there before, and we didn't have a great season. To be honest with you, so we the last game of the regular season, we're playing Pitt on CBS, and we are getting torched at halftime. And Coach Massimino comes in the locker room, and he says, I'll give you guys 4 minutes. After 4 minutes, if you're not playing the way I want you to play, you're out for the rest of the game. This is a nationally televised game. And understand this. In 1985, a nationally televised game on CBS was huge, because it wasn't like nowadays where there's a zillion games on TV. Not that CBS games aren't big now. They're huge. They're still happenings. But then it was ridiculous happening. And those guys didn't play well, and he took them out, and he had – the subs, walk-ons in the game for 15 minutes on national TV. He didn't care. So we struggled at the end of the year. St. John's beat us three times that year, and we couldn't even get close to Chris Mullin. They beat us pretty good three times also. So it was not a great regular season, but all of a sudden, caught lightning in the bottle, win that first game at Dayton, which was a really close game. We went basically at the buzzer, and all of a sudden, the roll starts, and boom, there you go.
You were the 8 seed going into the NCAA tournament. You beat the 9 seed Dayton 51-49 in Dayton. And then you move on to the second round against the 1 seed Michigan, usually where the winner of the 8-9 ends up ending their season. Instead, you survive against the Wolverines 59-55. Then, in the next round, Sweet 16, again a one-possession game, you survive 5-seeded Maryland 46-43. Three games and three not quite buzzer beaters, but really tight games at the end. What's it feeling like going into the Elite Eight after three nail biters?
Well, you know, the thing that we were doing was we held, like, in those three games, I believe we held two of those three teams under 40% from the field. So defensively, we were playing unbelievable. We had experienced guys. And that Dayton game was so big because in those days, there was no clock. They had a really good coach named Don Donaher. They were holding the ball. It was like a minute to go in the game. They're holding the ball for the last shot of the game on their home floor. And we make a steal, and we end up scoring basically at the buzzer. And all of a sudden, you see it happen all the time. A team gets through a game they might lose, and all of a sudden, boom, the confidence is there, the role is there, and all of a sudden you get this thing going. And, you know, beating that Michigan team, I believe, had won 17 games in a row. Roy Tarpley, Antoine Joubert, Gary Grant. I mean, it was a tremendous basketball team. Beat them. Then we play Len Bias for the second time in that season. And it was the only game, I believe, that Len Bias was under double figures in his career at Maryland. And all of a sudden, now we're playing North Carolina to go to the Final Four.
Did you think that Len Bias, having played against him, was the slam dunk superstar that so many thought he was going to be before he passed away tragically after the draft?
Absolutely. And we played him three times. We played him twice that year, and they came to us at Villanova and opened our pavilion the next year. We opened the pavilion in February of 86. And he played us we played them in the first game there. So we played him three times. He was an unbelievable player. This guy was a superstar. It's obviously a tragic thing that happened. But, he was going to be, I believe, one of the all-time greats.
Steve Lapis joins us this morning here on the show, looking back at the 85 National Championship. So after all these close games, you end up playing UNC in the Elite Eight, and you kind of blow them out. I mean, you beat them by 12 points, a double-digit win over the two-seeded UNC Tar Heels, which sends you into the Final Four. Now, again, you're the eight seed in the Final Four. The other guys left are number one or number two seeds. You end up playing the two-seed Memphis State at that point in time in the Final Four. At this point, now that you're in the final weekend, have you guys even forgotten that you're an eight seed, or is this a rallying cry?
No, I don't remember us really, you know, feeling like we were underdogs ever. You know, we played in the toughest league in the country. We played Georgetown to 2 one-possession games that year. These guys, before I had gotten there, they had beaten Patrick Ewing in Georgetown. When you play in a league like the Big East, where every day you're playing against basically a top 20 team, you know, you're not looking, and you win enough games. You've won games in that league. You're not going into any of these games feeling like you can't win. And we didn't go into not one. I'd say we probably felt the least confident against Michigan. Is probably, if I had to go back and think about it. But we felt like, hey, if we could play with Georgetown, who was, by the way, if they beat us that year in 85, that would be two in a row. People would have considered them one of the best teams in the history of college basketball. That's what they were doing historically at that time with Patrick. So when you play against guys like that all the time, you're not afraid of anybody.
So that's really interesting because you end up beating the Tigers 52-45. That sets up this matchup against Georgetown. Georgetown would be in its third national championship game in 4 years, all with Ewing. They had won the national championship the year before over Phi Slamma Jamma. So they are, I mean, monsters. They are as big as the sport could possibly have, and Patrick Ewing is as big as the sports star could ever have as well. Is it particular to your upset that you had played them already? In other words, had you played in the Big West or the Pac-10 or something like that and never seen them, would it have been a totally different outcome?
No, I don't know if the outcome would have been different, but I could tell you, we definitely, having played them and having been in the same, here's what I'll tell you. If Georgetown had played somebody different, they'd have definitely won the whole thing. If they'd have played somebody from outside the league, there's no doubt that the intimidation factor would have been huge. That was gone with us. And the thing about Georgetown, and people forget, Patrick Ewing was, if you ask me, who are the best college basketball players of all time? I'm going Kareem first, Bill Walton second, and guess what? Patrick is right there at third for what he accomplished in his college career. He was a defensive presence like we had never seen before. So, I mean, that Georgetown team was holding people to like 34% field goal percentage. If they'd have played anybody else in the country, they would have been national champions without a question. They ended up playing a team that knew them well, wasn't intimidated, had a guy like Eddie Pinckney, who was a sophomore. When they played against Georgetown, I was not there at the time, had 22 points and 20 rebounds against Patrick Ewing. So these guys, they weren't intimidated. And the lack of intimidation against Georgetown really hurt Georgetown.
The game by you guys in 1985 is sometimes referred to as the perfect game because it was almost like you couldn't miss. Now, defensively, as you said, Georgetown was shutting down everybody. How did you guys have a solution to be that efficient from the field against one of the best defensive teams in college basketball and with the best rim protector in Patrick Ewing that we had seen in decades?
Well, you know, the thing about our team was, and the thing about Coach Massimino's teams were, they were very smart, and we were a possession-by-possession team. And I know people talk about the fact there was no shot clock. We would have had, if the 45-second shot clock came in, I believe, the next year, we'd have had no shot clock violations in that game. So we didn't hold the ball for over 45 seconds on any possession in that game. So we were a possession team. We were very, you know, Coach Massimino called every single play. But the key was what we did defensively. Yes, we played great on offense. We did turn the ball over a little bit, but, you know, we go 9 for 10. We only take 10 shots in the second half and make 9 of them. Mm. So, I mean, when you think, and I look back, and they're going to show the game on CBS this weekend. I'm going to watch it again. I mean, some of the shots that we made were incredible, but it really was the defense. And we were thankful. I'll tell you one thing we were thankful. We were thankful that we played Georgetown instead of St. John's. And people will say, yes, absolutely, because Coach Massimino was a matchup zone guy. And Georgetown, for if they had a weakness, it was they were not a great perimeter shooting team. So that played to us. St. John's had Chris Mullen. And Chris Mullen, obviously, he was a lot more than just a great shooter, but he was so hard to match up with in a matchup zone that he just torched us 3 times. So we were much better off playing Georgetown. And because it was a good matchup for Coach Massimino, because he knew we could pack this thing in and challenge them from the perimeter, and rebound the ball, which obviously is always big with them, play slow, not hold the ball, but play slow. And, it had worked before, and it worked that night.
You can relive the greatest upset in national championship game history, the 8th-seeded Villanova Wildcats in 85, toppling mighty Georgetown this weekend on CBS, because we don't have a tournament. And so I want to ask you, Steve Lapis, as you've been a longtime broadcaster for the CBS family, what's it been like for you this month to not have the tournament?
Boy, it's been brutal. Obviously, we have a lot more serious things to worry about than not having college basketball. But, I was walking, went for a walk with my wife and my daughter. My daughter just had a baby about 7 weeks ago, so they're all here, which is nice. And, you know, we're seeing the flowers blooming, and this is supposed to be NCAA tournament. You know, the weather's getting warm, and you walk outside, and boom, you know, you feel great because the tournament is going on. So, you know, it's definitely something. I'll tell you this, we will really, really appreciate this thing next year like I can't tell you. And that's what I'm looking forward to. And we just got to get through this now, do what we have to do. And boy, but next year, I'm usually fired up. I'll be even more fired up.
I know. It's such a void, isn't it? I mean, for you and I who love college basketball, certainly there's a void. Your life has been in college basketball. But I just think also from the soundtrack of our lives, just if you're a casual sports fan, brackets, office pools, leaving work early to go watch games, upsets at night, watching buzzer beaters, all of that not being here is such an eerie feeling, isn't it?
You know, that especially that last Thursday and Friday, which would have been the first not yesterday, but a week ago, that Thursday and Friday, that would have been the first 2 days of the tournament, those are like the best days in sports all year. And, for me, the thrill that I have being part of it now that I'm able to broadcast it for CBS and Turner is really, it's a thrill for me. And it's been, a big part of my life in terms of, you know, I coached at the highest level. Now I get to broadcast at the highest level. So it's a thrill for me to be doing it, but boy, what a void for the whole country. And then you look at, obviously, I'm a college basketball guy. Yesterday was supposed to be opening day in baseball. And it's just really, we got to get through this, get back to normal, and everybody will really appreciate it. But I did want to throw one thing in, D.A. We shot 79% that night against Georgetown. Remember this. We shot 79% and we won by two. That tells you how good they were.
They shot nearly 80% and won by a bucket. One of the greatest upsets yeah. ever in national championship game history and NCAA tournament history. Steve Lapis was an assistant coach on that 1985 Villanova Wildcats team. Coach, it's always fun to talk basketball with you, pick your brain, and really cool to go down memory lane with you today, man. Thanks so much, and stay safe to you and the family.
You too, DA. Thank you.
Okay. Steve Lapis joining us this morning on the show. I love these segments, the madness of March, of reliving some of the great moments and dances and upsets and runs and Cinderellas in NCAA tournament history. It gives me at least a little bit of that jolt of March madness here this month. We'll continue doing it next week as well. This should have been Sweet 16 Friday. Tough. Tough not to have any of that in the background. But we soldier on, onward and upward. And next year we will have the NCAA tournament back. When we come back, is Jimmy Graham delusional? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
It's the show about the show. Here's the best of this week's Permission Granted podcast.
We didn't know how it would go. Props to Bogish for forcing the hand on air. But I think that's the hardest that I've laughed in 3 weeks.
I think more so than anything, just hearing Pete and knowing that he basically taped that in his bathroom added a little something to it as well. If I know that once a week, while I don't have games and we are sitting on quarantine, I could get Pete doing some kind of classic hip-hop song, that is the ultimate passing of time.
Find the PGP every week on radio.com, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else podcasts are downloaded.
I can't encourage you more to find Pete the Body Bilotti rapping Hip Hop Hooray from earlier in the week, responding in rap battle style to Rita Wilson, Tom Hanks' wife, who's in quarantine because she tested positive along with Tom, and doing so, going stir crazy, rapping Hip Hop Hooray. Pete the Body's response was an iconic response, and we posted that on our Twitter page, Facebook, YouTube. That clip is out there. Go find it. It's amazing. I was just watching it over dinner last night, actually, with the Bourbon Bell. We were cracking up. It is such a good job by Pete the Body. He absolutely crushes it, especially in the very staid, hey, ho, hey, ho. Hey. Every part of that is awesome. Hey. Ho.
Thank you.
Our toll-free line is sponsored by Geico this morning. Whether you own or rent, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Having a home, hard work. Get a quote at geico.com. That's easy. Time for our Ask the Pros question of the day, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service. At O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. Jim in Alabama asks, DA, I've really enjoyed the MLF interviews, Major League Fishing, a.k.a. MILF, and I'm wondering, do you think you'd have more anglers on the show moving forward, even if the other sports come back? Look, the answer is yes, a hard yes. And this has been a godsend to me. I've talked about this on the air. I just love fishing. I can't say I'm that good at it, but I love it. My dad brought me and my brother fishing growing up. We had a lake not far from our house, so we always used to go out of the lake and fish on most weekends and fished for sunnies and crappies and small bass and perch. And it was just one of the great memories that I'll ever have. And I grew up just loving to fish. So going out there on the ocean, when I get to go out in a party boat or go out to a pond or something like that with friends or anything, I just absolutely really love. Or even fishing by myself or solo with my brother, if we kind of hike through the woods and get to a place to fish, I just love it. And, you know, when you have a million sports going on and you're a nationally syndicated sports radio show, your responsibility is to so many different audiences that there are certain sports that unfortunately fall between the cracks. And Major League Fishing and the Bass Pro Tour, one of those things. Well, when sports went down 2 weeks ago, Major League Fishing reached out to me and said, well, I just want you to know that we are still going, so if you have any space in your schedule, we would love to have one of the anglers on. And I said, yes, 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 yes. You guys are still competing. This is good. This is great. Let's do it. And so we've had on two anglers. Unfortunately, Major League Fishing has also now shut down after last week. They've canceled their upcoming stops, and we'll see when they come back. But yesterday, Ott Defoe was such a fun interview. I just had so much fun listening to him. He's a guy that, from Tennessee, it just felt like I could go out, drop some crankbait in the water, crack a six-pack, and just fish with him all day long. And that, to me, is a bit of my zen, going out and fishing, even if I don't catch anything, just having that hook in the water is just so still and so pleasant. And I was like, Ott Defoe is the type of guy that I feel like I'm friends with after 10 minutes on the radio. And I'm sure you guys probably felt the same way. So I want to make sure that we have Ott on again. I want to make sure that if we can, give these guys some run, because they're having a good time. I think it connects with our listeners. I've had a lot of positive feedback from you guys about the fishing segments. And now with fishing season around, everybody's going to have some hooks in the water. I don't know. I think it's a great spot. So I appreciate the positive feedback that I've gotten on them. And Ott Defoe and Major League Fishing and their help in the matter has been awesome. So we'll definitely do it again, I promise. Let's play some audio from Jimmy Graham for you. Jimmy Graham has not been Jimmy Graham since he left New Orleans, and yet Jimmy Graham is acting as though he's still Jimmy Graham.
I'm still fast, you know, and I still have the ability to make big plays. Obviously, over the last 2 years, it's been very difficult for me. You know, I think it's lit in the fire, and I know what player I am, and I know what I can do. You know, I mean, I think I was able to show a little bit of that in the playoffs. So for me, this is a great opportunity to prove myself, to show everybody what I can do and the type of player that I am.
Graham has signed a free agent contract with the Chicago Bears. I'm sorry, I'm not buying it. Mraz, I'm just not buying it. I know that Jimmy Graham wants to be confident. He wants to say, I'm still elite. I haven't lost a step. There is nothing from what I see over the last two, three seasons that makes me believe that Jimmy Graham is anything close to what he once was. Hell, we can even go back to when he was in New Orleans in 2014. I know he made a couple of Pro Bowls. I kind of feel like a lot of that is just on reputation alone. He did catch 900 yards worth of balls for the Seahawks in 2016, but 17, 18, 19, unbelievably underwhelming. To me, Jimmy Graham ain't getting back to the old Jimmy Graham.
It feels like 15 years ago where Jimmy Graham wanted to be treated like he was a wide receiver when it came to getting paid by the New Orleans Saints. I mean, that's how long it's been. There was a time where it was 1A Rob Gronkowski, 1B Jimmy Graham as far as tight ends in the NFL, and I'm convinced even after a year off that you could put Rob Gronkowski on the Bears this year and he would have better numbers than Jimmy Graham. How could anybody buy into Jimmy Graham anymore? Now he's been on more teams seemingly than Antonio Cromartie's kids.
He's going to be 34 this year. He's playing for his fourth team in six seasons. I mean, do you buy that Graham can be even a legitimate threat? I mean, last year he had the perfect setup with Aaron Rodgers and caught less than 500 yards worth of footballs.
I don't buy it at all. And now what, Mitchell Trubisky suddenly going to be feeding him the rock in the red zone? Come on now. It makes no sense whatsoever. I can't get behind any of this. I understand Jimmy Graham has to sell himself a bit here, maybe play his own chip on his shoulder that he's been disrespected. But the bottom line is this. Look, there was a time, I remember being in the CBS Sports Radio hallways when the Jimmy Graham trade broke to Seattle. I mean, that was the buzz for a week. That was a main story on the show for a week. It was, wow, can you believe the Saints gave up on Jimmy Graham, who's this next Hall of Fame type tight end? And everything since that moment has been nothing but downhill. He has never been the player he was in New Orleans. So now, after bouncing around from team to team to team, suddenly he's going to find his way with Mitchell Trubisky? Not a chance.
Once upon a time in 2011, he caught 1,300 receiving yards and 11 touchdowns. With New Orleans in 2013, 16 touchdowns. Last year with Aaron Rodgers, 447 and 3 scores. Oh. The year before that with Aaron Rodgers, 636 and 2 scores. Although that was that an Aaron Rodgers injured year? I forget. But either way, I mean, he just hasn't been nearly the same. Even in Seattle, 520 yards his final season with the Seahawks. I mean, I guess you could still say he's a tough red zone matchup. But until you get inside the red zone, I just don't see how you can consider him an elite target.
Yeah, and to play that tight end, maybe he was onto something when he wanted to get played paid like a wide receiver. You watch enough Jimmy Graham. Is he out there exactly creating monster holes in your run game anymore either to be paid like a number one or be treated like the number one tight end on a team that has to do multiple different things? If he doesn't have the speed and separation anymore like he did to be a mismatch nightmare, is he even doing the little things a tight end needs to do? I guess that's a question needed to be asked, but I can't buy into any of this Jimmy Graham hype he's selling.
Isn't it funny that you think of Jimmy Graham always as a Saint? First a Saint, always a Saint. Those were his greatest years. He's been on three teams since then now.
It's
the
wild.
Seahawks, the Packers, and now the Bears. I would say that I won't ever remember any highlights, basically, of his final three stops, if this is his final stop. All of my Jimmy Graham memories will be the New Orleans Saints.
Yeah, unless it's somebody like you selling their jerseys on eBay, I bet you we're going to walk the streets in Milwaukee. The year is 2032, and you're going to see somebody in a Graham Packers jersey, and there will be a moment of pause going, wait, what Graham played for the Packers
yeah.
would have been worthy of having
yeah.
the jersey?
Yeah, Teddy Graham.
Yeah. Ooh, another thing to add to the list.
All right, Andrew Bogish is in with your headline this morning. Good morning, Andrew.
D.A., Sean, good morning. So the NFL draft is happening as scheduled in late April, whether teams like it or not. Roger Goodell made the announcement in a strongly worded memo last night. He told teams the league's Management Council Executive Committee unanimously approved proceeding with the draft as scheduled. And again, the commish going even farther, threatening punishment if teams disagree publicly with this. The General Managers Society recommended delaying the draft earlier this week. So the draft rolls on just as free agency does, which is how we got Tom Brady in Tampa Bay. His new head coach, Bruce Arians, a guest yesterday with our Tiki and Tierney.
He had a pretty strong feeling about us. It was just basically a long conversation that everything he was looking for, we had. And it was a quick decision.
Arians then explained why they were looking for an upgrade on Jameis Winston.
We had a great shot to get to 9-7, my outside shot at the playoffs, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we lose a couple of games on pick sixes. And it was disheartening because he had made progress.
Again, it's like Jameis stole, well, I guess he stole wins from Bruce Arians, but I can't remember a coach so easily being dismissive of a player like this.
It says a lot about what happened at the end. I think Bruce Arians felt like he had done everything he possibly could. He kept trying to drill into Jameis's brain, don't do this, don't throw here, don't make this decision. And
don't
by
throw to
week
the other guys.
16, week 16 and week 17, it's still happening. And Bruce Arians just said, scrap this. This is ridiculous. Screw this guy. I'm out of here. Because here he is going, we had a chance to go 9-7, and well, my quarterback screwed it all up by throwing a bunch of pick sixes.
As if everything else was perfect, except this guy throwing picks to the other side.
He hates Jameis. Hates Jameis Winston.
So much so that he said earlier this week that Teddy Bridgewater was plan B if Brady didn't work out.
Right.
So Jameis was not even remotely an option in Tampa Bay. So how about this morning for D-lineman Michael Brockers? He is no longer signing with the Ravens. An independent doctor found an issue with Brockers' ankle during a recent physical. They had agreed on a three-year deal worth as much as $30 million. But here's the good news. No Ravens, so Brockers is going back to the Rams, with whom he hurt that ankle at the end of last season. So I guess they're okay with it because they're basically giving him that same three-year, 30-mil deal that he almost got in Baltimore. So he loses one contract and then immediately gets another one with this same ankle in question.
Wow. Well, that's good luck. I mean, bum ankle, still getting your money. Nice job.
MLB and its players now in agreement on handling their shortened season. Players are soon getting a salary advance to cover April and May, but they'll only get paid more if there are games. Now, players scheduled to be free agents next winter will still be free agents next winter, even if the season is completely canceled and the draft delayed to July shortened to at least five rounds. The players have already signed off on this. Owners vote at noon Eastern.
How many rounds is the baseball draft usually?
Like 60, right? I mean, it's days. At some point, it's just a huge conference call.
Wait a second. So they're going to shorten this from 60 rounds to five?
Well, there's no college baseball this year.
Right. So when we get into really, if you want to, digging deep into this agreement, some of the meatier stuff is around the draft and international free agents. This agreement last night addresses multiple drafts this year, next year's, and 2022 in terms of their length, in terms of their bonus structures, where owners, because of cash flow concerns, want to make deferred payments. They want to scale back on these things. I just started reading Scott Boras is losing his mind over how he thinks prospects are getting screwed by all this in the draft. Plus, there's not money to sign kids that are international free agents. So it's not a simple agreement, and it's not just about major leaguers. It runs pretty deep through things that were negotiated in the current CBA that are now being changed. I don't want to say on a whim, but they're being changed with very little notice and maybe
this is amazing.
Not they went from all the way through.
40 rounds. It's a 40-round Major League Baseball draft to 5. 40 to 5. Yeah.
Now,
that's amazing.
At worst, 5.
Now, I would also say, is baseball dropping the ball in even moving this back? Because let's say we don't have opening day till the end of June, but the draft was supposed to be June 10th. Would we all not sit there and watch the baseball draft like we would the NFL draft on June 10th? I know I would.
Man, if there was no sports, would you watch the MLB draft? I mean, I guess I would if there was nothing else on.
Picture June,
yeah,
you'd be starving
you
for that.
Anybody, you know nobody in the draft, though. It's not the same thing as even basketball, let alone football. You don't know any of these players.
So let MLB Network run highlight film and tape that these people be watching in a week-long countdown leading up to it. Now we got 2 weeks of content.
MLB Network
I mean,
does
I guess
already,
it's something, but the
draft.
Problem is also that when you draft guys in Major League Baseball, they don't come in and play for you for 4 or 5 years.
Right.
So there's no urgency.
I don't care. I'm watching it.
The Indy 500 postponed yesterday, making the first time since 1945 that the race will not be run on Memorial Day weekend. The Masters and PGA Championship already postponed. Now the New York Post says the U.S. Open will not be played in mid-June at Winged Foot. The USGA won't confirm that, only admitting that a postponement is possible. And Pete, maybe sit down for this one. Roman Reigns has reportedly pulled out of WrestleMania next month.
Oh, boy.
Now, on a serious note, he's a leukemia survivor, so maybe he's got concerns about being around any number of people in the current health situation. He was supposed to fight, air quotes, Goldberg for the Universal belt, which, much to Sean's chagrin, is not actually a belt you can wear with jeans.
My guess is Roman Reigns probably already knew he was scripted to lose to Goldberg, so why not pull
out?
Yes, exactly.
Watch
because
it, guys.
Remember, wrestling is fake.
You are on thin ice, and Pete the Body controls all of your audio levels from your homes, so you better be very, very careful about what you say.
Don't push me today.
Pete not today. Yeah, today of all days, do not push Pete the Body.
Let's be honest, we also need WrestleMania. I think we all might be watching it come that Sunday.
You might be right. I might be breaking down whatever happens in the steel cage match. They do that, Pete?
I'm going out sick that day.
Okay. Is there a Hell in the Cell? What happens here?
There's 16 matches, but no Hell in the Cell.
Okay. WrestleMania.
Every match is Bogus' update the next morning.
Is Andre the Giant fighting Hulk Hogan this year?
What, as a hologram?
That's about where my wrestling knowledge ended. 1984.
I didn't even know there was a universal belt.
All right, thank you, Andrew. When we come back, it's a Target Demo Friday, DA, CBS Sports Radio.
It's a black hole block party. Here's what our listeners are doing as they connect to the mothership.
Hank on Facebook writes, he's on 93.1 The Ticket in Boise, delivering packages for UPS. What's going on, Dirty Dirty? Can I get a beam up? Spencer on Facebook is in York, Pennsylvania on AM 1440, heading out to do some repairs in a sewage pumping station tank, hopefully neither wet nor drippy.
I'm a little wet, a little drippy.
Cody on Facebook, listening while disc golfing in Winona, Minnesota, and yes, I'm wearing a Yelich jersey. Hashtag never too old. Ray is listening in the car in Buffalo. Keep doing great work, bringing home some type of sports talk. Took the kids to see the Globetrotters a couple of years ago. It was awesome.
Good morning.
Curly Neal from the Harlem Globetrotters passed away yesterday. He was a legend. Him, Meadowlark Lemon. I think those guys are just amazing entertainers. I always loved the Harlem Globetrotters. Danny on Facebook is in Huntsville, Alabama, listening on the CBS Sports app, protecting the people who make the hardware and software that make our military run. Dimitri on Facebook is in Abilene, Texas, listening on the radio.com app out here with my essential job delivering packages for FedEx. Jeff on Facebook, listening at home in Buffalo, love the show, provides a bit of normalcy during this time. Hashtag little wet, little drippy.
I'm a little wet, little drippy.
Justin on Facebook, Target Demo Fridays are a blast. I love listening to what everyone is up to. Justin in Savannah, Georgia will be at home in the pool, a little wet, a little drippy, having a cold one. I'm listening on the CBS Sports app. Have a great weekend to all the D-Aliens and the staff. You guys made my week go a whole lot easier.
I'm a little wet, a little drippy.
I like stuffing.
On Twitter, Kevin tweets, listening in Auburn, Maine on the radio.com app. Grateful that I'm able to work from home. Never saw the Globetrotters, but can I get a beam up for curling? Travis in Houston, girlfriend wants to do wine and cheese tonight in honor of opening day. What's a good five cheese rotation? Do I go Gouda tonight for my day one starter? Meraz has tackled this on Twitter. I highly encourage you to follow him there for the latest on a five cheese rotation for opening weekend in baseball, had it have been. Bob is on Twitter listening on an old-fashioned radio in Pennsylvania, Sports Radio 96.7. Man froze at home in North Kansas City, Missouri. Our office is on lockdown until 4:24. I'm listening on the radio.com app on my droid.
Well, I feel good and I'm doing well.
Rob the 321, DA, I'm working in the city of Melbourne, sanitizing every single thing on site and listening on the radio.com app. I'll be social distancing from everyone here. Beam me up. And Chuck says, DA, can we just figure out how many Jocko loans of toilet paper is acceptable for one person to have? I'm guessing between a tenth and three tenths. Well, I'm glad.
Get back in there. That wasn't 20 seconds. Get back in there.
I'm glad you asked that, Chuck, because that leads us into the epic fail of the morning. How much TP do you have? This
Even
is your
the
epic
DA
fail.
DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
I want to ask you, what's your TP war chest look like?
All right, so I am down to 19 rolls. I'm kind of, it's kind of like the countdown on New Year's Eve. You know when you get to the last minute and we start going second by second, 58, 57. I had the 20 roll pack that I bought about 3 weeks ago that was like my, okay, when we get down, this is what we're going to lean on. I have cracked that open. Just pre-show, I put the first roll on my bathroom here that's next to my homemade studio here, and I am down to 19 rolls.
They're clean, cuz. My heart is clean.
Okay. And I'm starting to do the math. Now, I'm trying to hold it in more. I'm trying to do this. You know, my wife decided to blow her nose the other day with a toilet paper.
What are you doing?
What are you doing? You can't do that.
Handkerchiefs, Danielle.
Right,
handkerchiefs.
Right. And I'm not going to get gross, but I'm doing a fold-over technique here, trying to reuse as much as possible.
Oh, yeah. I'm Charmin clean.
But with 19 rolls, it's starting to give me anxiety. And I don't know. Are we going through a roll a day? Is it a roll every 2 days? I don't know what's going on in this house.
No, it's single digits. It's when you're in single digits is when you start thinking, okay, where am I going to get my next rolls from?
No, you smell butts.
Try to do less than a roll a day. Try not to run through a roll a day because then that gives you another 10 days until you're in single digits.
Then you run into the paranoia. It's when you go to the store and then you're grabbing that 20-pack of toilet paper. Are people judging you? Do you really need all that? And then you're pleading with them. I've been making enchiladas. There's nothing you can
no.
do here. What do you do?
I'm about the same way. I bought a 24-pack like a month ago because it was on sale. Ended up being a terrible, terrible quality. It's like really, really...
very bland.
One ply, so it's the worst type.
Don't you wish you had your jerseys now?
I would have cut up that Daryl Strawberry 1983 jersey in a heartbeat.
Didn't need that money on eBay now, did you?
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
Oh, the TP shortage. Don't worry, they're going to keep making TP. Do not hoard it. Please, do not hoard it. Everybody will have enough TP as long as we buy them sensibly. Alien OG on a Facebook, or on a Twitter, rather, says, nothing can stop us printing the Boulevard beer labels. I'm in Lawrence, Kansas, and listening on the never-to-be-updated CBS Sports app that still shows Taz and the Moose. We'll get that fixed, I promise, at some point in time. We're only into month three, so things move a little slowly here. Hey, thanks to the guys here on the show. Pete the Body Bilotti from Mission Control, awesome. Connor Green, awesome. Sean Mraz, executive producer. Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of Watch DA. Andrew Bogish on your headlines. Be good and be good to one another. I'm DA, the Mothership Disconnect.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.